Our guest in this hour sits in for me a great deal. He's a friend of mine, a friend of the show, and a friend of yours, not just on Facebook, Twitter, etc., but I know when you have hear him. And I wanted to have him on tonight because he certainly knows his stuff when it comes to the law. And remember, our guests are here for you as well. So give us a buzz if you have questions, opinions, comments, or concerns. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark Levine is joining us tonight, a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. He currently hosts the Washington-based radio and television talk show The Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus, on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. He also frequently appears on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, and CNBC, tangling with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to his Pacifica co-host on the left. Well, Mark and I don't tangle much, but we have. We've sparred a couple of times. Mark, good evening, sweetie. How are you doing?
I'm good. Every now and then we disagree, Leslie, but you're right. It's rare.
I'm so glad you're here tonight. I said to the other Mark, Mark Grimaldi, that, you know, yesterday I was so angry about what was being said and going on with Justice Scalia, and I had so many things I was feeling, but I really didn't know if any of them, not the feelings were appropriate, but if actions I think could be taken were appropriate. So let's talk about it. We talked yesterday about Justice Scalia mocking the health care law with the Cornhusker kickback provision that actually no longer exists. Now, when we hear something like this, to me, it's scary that a Supreme Court justice is not knowledgeable enough and up on facts enough that something that years ago was a provision clearly taken out and is spouting Tea Party rhetoric rather than facts. My first question is, you know, in a criminal trial, Mark, this to me would be a mistrial. Can this be a mistrial based on a couple of things? One, that the Supreme Court justices refuse, at least Scalia refuses, Not to read 2,700 pages, but even the portions of the law which they're making decisions on the constitutionality of, et cetera. And a reference to Cornhusker kickback, some people, you know, might say it's much ado about nothing. But I say, how can you make a decision that will affect millions of people's lives, possibly, you know, potentially? Well, either way, right? You know, whether they uphold it or not, if you don't know your facts. So can you have, you know, forgive me, is there a word for a mistrial with the Supreme Court, or are you just screwed if the Supreme Court doesn't do their homework?
There's no court of appeal after the United States Supreme Court. Even in a lower court, this would probably be considered what they call harmless error. In other words, trial judges make errors all the time, but unless it's a reversible error, unless it's an error so bad as to basically destroy the entire trial, you don't win on appeal from a lower court. And, of course, there is no appeal to after the Supreme Court. So legally, it means nothing at all. However, politically, morally, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the Cornhusker kickback was never even really part of the health care law. You may recall that the way they did it, it was complex procedurally. But they had to get 60 votes. They had to get past the Republican filibuster to pass part of it. And the other part they had to do, they could do through reconciliation, which only required 50 votes. There's complicated procedural reasons why they did all that. But basically, the health care bill was passed in two bites. Both bites were actually passed the same day. So the day they put in the Cornhusker kickback, which was done to get Ben Nelson's vote, you may recall there were just a few months when the Democrats had 60 votes, and Ben Nelson of Nebraska was the most conservative Democrat. In fact, he voted more often with the Republicans than the Democrats. And in order to get his vote, they had to get some special stuff to Nebraska. That same day, in the House, at least, when they voted on both sections, they voted it in and voted it out. So it never actually was in the law because the one they could do by 50 votes stripped that provision out.
We're going to take a break. Mark Levine is our guest. Pick up the phone and join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark sits in for me. He's a good friend of mine, a friend of the show. We know that you all like him. And by the way, in D.C., he hosts his own radio and television talk show, The Inside Scoop, and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. We'll be back. I'm Leslie Marshall, and you listen to my show, and if you listen to my show often enough, you know that I have bought gold, and you know why many people buy gold. But maybe something you didn't know is that there are gold coins out there that are as small as a tenth of an ounce. And you might say, well, what good are those? They actually offer a very low price point, certainly lower than 1 ounce coins. They also allow more flexibility, okay? More flexibility if you want to sell them later or if you want to distribute them to others, even will them to others. So why not learn about these coins and why so many people choose Goldline as I have when they want to diversify their portfolios? So call my friends at Goldline today. They've been helping people acquire gold for more than 50 years, and they're the only precious metals company that I recommend to you now. Call Goldline today, 1-800-275-COIN. Ask them about the different payment options, read their important risk information, and see if buying gold and silver is right for you. But don't wait. Get this information now. 1-800-275-COIN. Be sure to tell them Leslie Marshall sent you, and you'll receive the latest issue of the American Advisor newsletter and a Goldline investor kit free, free, free. There's no obligation to call, so call them now. Goldline, 1-800-275-2646. That's 1-800-275-COIN. We're talking with Mark Levine, a friend here on the Leslie Marshall Show, sits in for me as well and hosts his own show, as I told you, the Washington-based radio television talk show, The Inside Scoop, and also on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM, The Raucous Caucus. Mark, thanks for holding and welcome back. So can't appeal the Supreme Court, et cetera. One thing I think that we may agree on is, and I'm kind of angry as an American about this too, Mark, I feel this was just a show this week. I mean, the four conservatives, we know how they're going to vote. The four liberals, we know how they're going to vote. And even though Kennedy's a conservative and votes conservative a lot, he's the guy that's the decider in this, isn't he? And I mean, do we really need to have the show? I know cameras weren't allowed in the courtroom, but do you know what I'm saying? I just felt like it was a waste of time and taxpayer money because I think Scalia and others were very clear, even on the left, that they had already made up their mind. Perhaps Kennedy has as well.
I'll tell you, I was pessimistic when they first scheduled this hearing. To me, that was the clearest sign they were going to overturn it. Now, of course, I don't know what's going to happen yet. The opinion won't be rendered till June. But as you know, I came to Washington on the backs of Bush v. Gore. That was the extreme decision that said that even though the American people elected Gore, they're going to anoint Bush as president. And that shocked me so much that I traveled 3,000 miles to Washington and began a new life. In that Bush v. Gore decision, they doubled the normal time for oral argument. The normal time for oral argument before the United States Supreme Court is half an hour. And in Bush v. Gore, when they selected the president over the backs of the American people, they made it an hour long. In this case, they made it 6 hours long. And I think the reason they made it so long is because it's very tough to make an argument based on prior precedent that this thing is unconstitutional. As I've mentioned in the past, you know, they even found growing marijuana for your own use because you're in excruciating pain in California affects interstate commerce, Scalia found, even though you say you're not going to sell it because you might sell it. And yet somehow he's arguing that 1/6 of the nation's economy is not interstate commerce. It doesn't pass the laugh test. But when they scheduled 6 hours, I thought, well, that's so they can go through this show, as you put it, to somehow persuade Americans that it's unconstitutional. Of course, most Americans don't know constitutional law, but virtually every law professor in the country said this thing has to be upheld based on prior precedent. But that assumes the Supreme Court is applying the law. And I felt, frankly, ever since Bush v. Gore, and certainly since Citizens United, this is a court, or at least five members of the court, that really don't care so much about the law. They care more about their political views. And I think that's a shame. I think it's a shame for America, for the law, and for the Constitution.
So your prediction, 5-4 against upholding it, 5-4 stating with majority rule that the mandate is unconstitutional.
That is my prediction. I don't necessarily think that they're going to invalidate the entire statute. That would be even more extreme. It's not out of the question, though. I certainly think that's possible. I think what they may do is invalidate the individual mandate and then sever it. But, you know, this court shocked me in Bush v. Gore. I didn't think they would overturn an election either. What's interesting is that I was always the most pessimistic with anyone I talked about this case. As soon as they, like I said, as soon as they gave it 6 hours, I became pessimistic, even though I fully concede that under the law, any law professor, if they had a student that said it was unconstitutional, they would flunk out because any student applying the law knows that it is. But again, this is a court that's shown often that they care more about their politics than the law. And I'm sorry about that. I don't like to make that allegation against five justices of the Supreme Court. There is, by the way, a small chance, and I give it maybe a 5 to 10% chance. But based on my listening to the questions, I actually think Kennedy is lost. There is some small chance that Chief Justice Roberts, who wants to keep the the court well thought of. I mean, that's very important to him as Chief Justice. People already think of the court as extremely political after Bush v. Gore and Citizens United. Based on his questions, he, interestingly, could be the fifth vote to narrowly uphold the statute. I give that, like I said, maybe a 10% shot, which isn't a very high shot. But I actually think Kennedy's vote is lost. So in this rare case, Chief Justice Roberts could be the swing vote, but I wouldn't bet on it.
When you heard that it was going to be 6 hours of, you know, arguments, you know, these 3 days, and the way that was presented, you said you were pessimistic, or that made you pessimistic. Can you explain why?
Well, sure. Every case has oral argument. If you just told me, well, not every case. The vast majority of cases before the Supreme Court have oral argument. Maybe the simple 9-0 ones don't. But so if it had a simple half-hour normal oral argument, that I wouldn't think anything was up. If they expand it to an hour, well, okay, it's an important thing. It's certainly gotten a lot of attention. That, like I said, Bush v. Gore was an hour-long oral argument. But 6 hours, I don't think the Supreme Court has done that since before World War II. I mean, it's certainly not in modern history. And in doing so, I really think that it's because they were searching, really searching, and trying to make it a big deal so that they could then overturn it. Again, it's just tea leaves. You know, I don't talk with the justices. I'm just guessing, like everybody else. But as soon as I heard that, I came on my radio and said, boy, if they need 6 hours, that's because it's really hard to overturn it. Remember, there's four separate constitutional provisions, arguably five, really, that support the constitutionality of this law, and the court has to strike down every one of them. This isn't like they just knock out one thing. They have to say it's not that health care is not in the general welfare. They have to say it's not part of Congress's taxing provision. They have to say that it's not part of the necessary and proper clause, which is a catch-all phrase that includes everything. They have to say that it's not interstate commerce, which we've talked about. And there's actually a fifth argument. I don't know if this has been proposed, but even the Equal Protection Clause helps support this case because it's the first law that actually requires women's health care to be the same cost as men's health care. Prior to this law, insurers always charged women more than men because of maternity leave and things like that, or maybe just because of discrimination. So I actually think you could even make an equal protection clause. That's probably the most tenuous one. But the other four are pretty solid. They have to argue that all four or five provisions of the Constitution don't apply for them to win their case. And again, that's exceedingly hard to do given prior precedent.
Mark, did the White House just not see this coming? I mean, they could have, you know, fought to keep this from the court for longer. They basically think they were going to win.
Or they could have just used the word tax instead of penalty and it wouldn't even be in the court.
You're both right. You know, I think, you know, and I drafted legislation for a living, so I know about hiding stuff in there to make things constitutional. In fact, I did that a few times. Had I been drafting this legislation, I would have said, for purposes of Article 1, Section 8 in the Constitution, this is considered taxing for the general welfare. And just say that in the purpose clause, you know, and then Obama could still argue it's a penalty and so forth and say that's just, you know, that's just the constitutionality provision. I don't think they saw it coming, Mark. I don't think they saw it coming because of this strong prior precedent that clearly it's okay under the Interstate Commerce Clause. I don't think they'd have to rely on the tax clause. Remember, any of these four separate arguments work. And they relied heavily on the Interstate Commerce Clause, given Scalia's past, where he said, because I guess he hates marijuana, that he could crack down on Californians following California law because he didn't like the people who voted for the medical marijuana statute. I think Obama thought it was a slam dunk, and of course every law professor in the country would tell them it's a slam dunk. What Obama doesn't do, unfortunately sometimes, is recognize that there are people who put their politics ahead of their legal reasoning. Sure, the court should not do that, but after Bush v. Gore, how can we ever trust a court to put the law ahead of their own politics? That woke me up. I got to tell you, before 2000, I thought the Supreme Court would put the law over politics. But ever since 2000, I've screamed, the emperor has no clothes. Look, listen, America, this is a court that's not following the law. And I'll never be that naive again, as I was before.
Leslie, do you mind if I ask two other quick ones?
No, go ahead.
Basically, just from the standpoint of how I'm looking at it, what can be done? Like, knowing this, Mark, okay, say you're in the position of, you know, whether it's for the administration or just a general consensus of Americans who don't want this to happen, what, if any, recourse between now and the summer can happen? And if there's none, the second part of my question is, what can you do after, say they do strike it down? I know it's probably thin, but what are your thoughts on that?
I'd say there's no recourse between now and June. Again, you could hope that they're not going to strike down the entire law. They'll only strike down the individual mandate. But like I said, this is a reckless group of five. They may well strike down the entire thing. At the end of the day, you just got to wait for one of those five on the court to retire. And that's really all you can do. You can reelect Obama, wait for one of those five to retire, and then finally appoint a justice that respects the Supreme Court.
But would it ever come back to court, though? Would it ever come back? Wouldn't they have to find, what would it do? Go to a state, they would bring it back up, and then what, reintroduce it? I mean, would that be possible?
Well, not going
to
happen.
It would be very, very hard to reintroduce it back in Congress. It would be hard to bring it back up. Some are arguing, and I don't know that this is completely wrong, that in some weird way we can turn this, if they do overturn it, and I think they will. I may be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But turn it into a victory for the things that progressives really want, like national health care, single payer, Medicare for all. Because interestingly, that the court made very clear is perfectly possible. They had to make that clear because, let's face it, that's exactly what Medicare is. And if the court didn't make that clear, they'd be invalidating Medicare, and that would cause tens of millions of people to go into the streets and burn down the Supreme
Politically,
Court.
Politically, Leslie and Mark, maybe I can ask you, how long do you think don't you think that would take generations to get to that point? I mean, realistically?
Well, here's the thing. If they strike it down, and here's where I think Roberts may be very careful. He may stop the individual mandate but keep the rest of it. I think Roberts knows that if he strikes down the entire law, that it will really be a black eye for the court. It'll be seen as an extremely political action, and it might just cause people. Remember, one of the interesting things is this bill required 60 people to get past the filibuster, but expanding Medicare doesn't require 60 people. I think that could be done under reconciliation. And some people may disagree with me on that, but basically what is Medicare? It's a taxing provision to spend on people. That's part of budget reconciliation, and that might only require 50 votes. So, you know, I've long argued that my favorite way to fix the healthcare system is all you do is you go to the Medicare statute and remove the term 65. Because when young people pay into the system, remember, the goal of the mandate was to get young people, healthy people, paying into the system, and most 30, 40, 50-year-olds are healthier than most 70, 80, 90-year-olds. So, interestingly, expanding Medicare is in many ways simpler. People understand Medicare. It's not a 2,700-page bill. Politically, it may be the best way to go. Now, you know, elect me, and that's what I'm running on.
Well, you know what I don't under... Well, I hope you're wrong. You know I love you, Mark.
I hope I'm wrong, too.
I fear you're right. I don't think that they will throw the whole thing out because that would make the court look very bad because you're talking about saying to millions of very sick people, children that are born with terminal illnesses, screw you. Yeah, you now go back to being uninsured and the insurance company can turn you away. And I think that's inhumane. I don't understand how, you know, any court could do that. What I am concerned about is can the president be reelected if the mandate is deemed unconstitutional when he is a lawyer who taught constitutional law?
I don't think it'll affect his reelection. To me, it's a black eye on the court. Now, it's true, a lot of people aren't going to understand this. It's all about spin. That's what politics is. It'll depend how you explain it. I would hope, you know, Obama's in a tough bind politically. Because, you know, you can, talk radio hosts can just yell and scream about this decision if they knock it down. So can legal scholars, because it has no basis in law. But we did that after Bush v. Gore, and I remember crying out and people saying, you know, get over it. It's very hard. These are somewhat arcane legal concepts. A lot of people think it's unconstitutional. They're wrong, but just because, you know, they're not a legal scholar, they don't know the law, and so they think it is. And it'll be interesting to see how he reacts, because if he takes too much umbrage, he might be seen as bad. But if he takes too little, if he says, look, you know, I thought this was constitutional, then like you say, then he may look bad himself. So he'll need to carefully walk that distance of saying, look, under prior precedent, this thing was supposed to be upheld. I don't think these judges applied prior precedent. They are the United States Supreme Court. I have to respect the decision, just like when they chose Bush to be president.
Right.
I thought the American people should have had a say, but they thought otherwise. And I don't like the decision. I disagree with the decision, but I have no choice but to accept it. and I'm moving on.
And now, is it just that, is it, Mark, that they had these 3 days that they spent the time, you felt, as you said, to convince the American people that it wasn't constitutional, but... is it Kennedy's questions, because I really feel he's the decider, the only, you know, right. really potential swing vote, and even, you know, Roberts, you know, because of what they said. And I say that because there are many out there, and you know better than I, that say you can't always judge the outcome by the questions or the tone, you know, of that back and forth.
Well, it's true that there's no guarantee, but I have argued many in the Pellett case. And I can tell you that after oral argument, I have a pretty good sense of whether I won or lost that case. You can tell from the oral argument. I mean, judges aren't just arguing maybe for the sake of theater. They're really not. They're trying to throw their best arguments at you. And sometimes you could change the course in oral argument. I've done that before. But Kennedy's questions were worse than Roberts. That's the thing that makes me so pessimistic. Kennedy's questions were harsher than Roberts. That's why I think, actually, if it is upheld, I actually think it'll be the four Democrats plus Roberts.
Okay. But now, because we have 60 seconds, let's do this quick. What the hell are they doing between now and June? We're not stupid. We know they've all, you know, but maybe one made up their mind. If they're not going to read the damn thing, what are they doing between now and June?
They're writing the opinions. They're sharing them among each other. They're shopping them among the justices. They're trying to get a majority. This takes a lot of time and effort. It's going to be a 100 or 200 page decision, I'm sure. They're working on it.
All right, Mark, we love you. Thank you for joining us. Mark Levine, as always, currently hosts the Washington-based radio television show The Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. He sits in for me here very much and very often on The Leslie Marshall Show. Check out his website, marklevinetalk.com. That's MarkLevineTalk.com. And also follow him on Twitter, at marklevinetalk. That's MarkLevineTalk. I'm Leslie Marshall, Talk Radio News Service, coming up right after this, and we'll be back with you.